everybody. A funny thing happened just a couple of hours after we finished this week's podcast, which spent a lot of time talking about the state of Star Trek movies, and we did all our speculation about it. And then all of a sudden we finish up. A few hours later, we get this news that they've actually hired a writer to do the next Star Trek movie. Her name is Kalinda Vasquez.
You may recognize her name. She joined Star Trek Discovery in the third season as a consulting producer, and she wrote one of the episodes, Terra Firma Part 2, which was the second Mirror Universe episode. And she wrote one of the short treks, the one called Ask Not, which is the one where Captain Pike was trapped in that, was doing that simulated,
like testing the crew member to see if she was, if she would cave and let him go or follow protocols.
Before Star Trek, she's worked on a lot of genre stuff. She was on Fear of the Walking Dead, Once Upon a Time, Nikita, a few other things. She's still a young writer, but she's had quite a lot of experience. She was just last week, a deal was announced where she's going to be the showrunner of a new HBO time travel show. And she's collaborating with George R. R. Martin, who's also an executive producer on that. That is called Roadmarks, based on an old sci-fi novel.
It's not too shabby. Those are some good credits.
Yeah, exactly. So, but this is a brand new thing where she's going to be working with Paramount and with Bad Robot. Now, J.J. Abrams' production company, even though Abrams is now working more with Warner Brothers, like he was recently announced to be producing a new Superman movie. Bad Robot is still working with Paramount. They're producing at this time two Mission Impossible movies, a Cloverfield movie, and they have been spearheading the Star Trek development. There's no director name. There's really no details on the plot.
Except that it's her idea, a totally original idea from her, which is pretty cool.
Right. So this is kind of a totally new project. This isn't like her coming in to rewrite one of the other projects. And later in the podcast, you know, we'll talk about the three different projects that were in development after Star Trek Beyond. This is a fourth one, basically, because they've already commissioned and paid for three scripts in the last 4 or 5 years. And this is the fourth.
And it sounds like the front runner.
Yes, assuming they, you know, and we're going to get into this when you hear the rest of our podcast, we talk about, this doesn't mean that there's only one Star Trek project. You know, this could be a side project or it could be the main project. So this doesn't necessarily mean that the, quote, Star Trek 4 project with Chris Hemsworth isn't happening. But it could indicate that they're moving in a new direction. But we don't know anything about it. Looking at her body of work, she just wrote a superhero comic for Marvel. I would bet that this would be a movie that featured a strong female lead. I'm just guessing, but she seems like the writer who, and if you look at a short trek, you saw a strong female character prominently. You know, she wrote the, it wasn't her choice. She was assigned this, but she wrote the episode focusing on Michelle Yeoh's exit, her final episode. So, you know, maybe that's her forte. That's why she was tapped for this assignment.
I'm excited. We need, you know, someone different writing Star Trek movies. So, and there's almost never been a woman in any kind of senior position on these movies. I mean, we almost got our first woman director, which we talk about in the podcast, but this to me is really exciting.
Yeah, there's definitely never been a female writer for the feature film.
Her credits are pretty cool. I'm a big fan of Once Upon a Time. I love that she is a nerd, that she's into sci-fi, that she's into comics. She's actually named after a Star Trek character from the original series, although spelled differently, which is funny. Kalinda from By Any Other Name. Which gives her sort of nerd cred at birth.
I mean, I guess her parents were huge TOS fans, yeah. Right?
Good job, parents. They must be so excited.
Oh God, this, yeah. I mean, well, I mean, they were probably excited when she got the job on Discovery, and now, you know,
yep.
it just gets better and better. So hope maybe next week we'll know more in the new segment, but that's the big news. So Paramount is, you know, is moving forward. As we said, we'll say in the pod, we know they want to do something. We just don't know what it is. And we don't think they know what it is, but apparently they do know what it is.
Apparently they do.
Or at least, you know, I mean, let's, you know, I just want to put, let's not get too excited. They've put a lot of, you know, they've put a lot of things into development over the last few years. What's different now though, is this will be the first thing that Emma Watts has been involved with since she came on board last summer and put all the other projects on hold. So, and the studio has more money now and I think is in a better shape now. So maybe they now have an idea of where they want to go, and this could be it, or at least one of the places they want to go. Because I'm still convinced that they want to eventually get to the place where they do multiple Star Trek movies in the same way Star Wars and DC and the MCU are doing multiple movies in their franchises.
But, and you'll hear all that on the podcast where we have no idea that Kalinda Vasquez will be writing one.
So hopefully we'll have more news next week, if not in the future. But for now, take a listen to us ignorantly. We're going to cover the rest of the week's news and then ignorantly discuss the future of Star Trek movies. And we're never going to mention Kalinda Vasquez's name because
we didn't know.
So here we go. Here's the rest of the podcast. Hi, this is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Laurie Elster. And this is the All Access Star Trek podcast. Today, we are going to talk about the state of Star Trek movies. And there's a lot to talk about, even though there's nothing happening yet. But first, let's start with the news, because it's a very big day for Paramount Plus.
So on Thursday, March 4th, they finally launched Paramount Plus, which is the new version of CBS All Access, the rebranded CBS All Access. And if you are a regular CBS All Access user, you will notice that nothing changed. Except they changed the name and the logo. And in fact, you have to kind of force the update. A lot of people didn't even notice that. So there actually is new content. There's some new stuff. Nothing Star Trek, of course. But there's the SpongeBob movie and a few other things.
Real World and stuff like that.
Yeah. But the user interface didn't change at all. It's exactly the same as it was the day before, as far
which is the biggest disappointment. I mean, honestly, I changed my subscription. I made it through Amazon because I liked their interface so much better, and I was having all kinds of quality problems with CBS All Access. But I switched it back in anticipation of this relaunch, and I wanted to take advantage of the deal, the subscription for a year deal. But I gotta say, I wasn't so happy when I opened it up and it was exactly the same.
If you haven't used the app since, say, Picard Season 1, you will actually notice quite a few improvements. First, there's all this new Viacom CBS content that they've been adding slowly over the last year. But there are a lot of under-the-hood improvements. There's profiles now, which you could have kind of, different family profiles, because there's all the Nickelodeon content that you may not want your kids to watch other stuff. There's 4K support and you could download episodes on your mobile app and all sorts of, you know, stuff that you should be able to do. They've been adding, and they've added a ton of content over the last year, but the visual interface, the navigation is unchanged, and they keep on adding more and more content to a thing that can't take this much content. I think it's too hard to navigate. You can't save things as a watch list, which seems, I don't know any other streaming app, certainly not a big one, that doesn't have that feature. And I at this point,
you're just so astonished. We've talked about this. You are so astonished by this missing feature. And the funny part is that I have never used that feature before on any of my streaming apps. And I think I'm the outlier, though. I think a lot of people do, but I don't. I asked my husband and he said, oh, no, I've never done that either.
Yes, not everyone uses this. I'm a heavy user of lists. I always go straight to my list. I don't care what their algorithm picks for me. I know. Now, it does show you what you watched last. So if you're binging something, you can keep on binging it. That's fine. But there may be a movie. They've got hundreds of movies in this thing now, and they're going to be adding, they say, over 3,500 movies by the summer. So if they don't add because you'll see something, you don't want to watch it now, but you want to go hunting for it, a week from now when you think you do want to watch, and you have time to sit down and watch a whole movie. So, and then of course, the other thing is, if you think about it from a Star Trek point of view, so to get to the Star Trek content, you go to shows, then Star Trek. Fine. That's all the Star Trek TV shows. But none of the movies are there because the movies are in the movies section, but there isn't a Star Trek movies tab. You actually
have to look. There isn't even a sci-fi section.
Right. You have to look under action movies, and then you'll see a small collection of Star Trek movies, which is the other kind of disappointment on day one, is they only have 4 Star Trek movies. This is all to do with Byzantine old licensing deals, because they cut all these deals years ago. If you were thinking Paramount Plus must have a lot of Paramount movies in it, you may be surprised, because there's none of them.
And not happily.
Right.
You may be unhappily surprised.
Yeah, if you're looking for big hit Paramount movies from the last decade, I don't think there's many on there. So it's not just Star Trek. It's like all sorts of stuff. But they promise that that's all going to change. They're adding literally thousands of Paramount movies later this year that aren't on the system now. Hopefully, Star Trek is out there.
Yeah.
Let's move on. So yes. Let's talk about one of those shows, Star Trek Picard, which is currently shooting season 2. So one of our favorite guys is Jonathan Frakes, of course.
And he's one of our favorite spoiler droppers who's gotten into some trouble over the years for saying things he shouldn't.
He's learned his lesson, I think. So after our last podcast, he posted something on Twitter, which is just, it was just this photograph of himself, John Delancey, and LeVar Burton.
From like a photo shoot from a long time ago.
When I saw that, I recognized the photo because it was part of this whole cool collection of photos from this London photographer to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm like, why did he post that today? What's happening today? I'm like, well, Picard is in production. He's definitely directing some episodes. He already told us that. We don't know if he's, where he is on that. But it kind of adds up that maybe he's dropping us a hint, because we put up an article kind of putting these pieces together to say, we know he's involved in the show somehow. LeVar has said he, a year ago, said he's in talks with the producers. Delancey said he's coming back as Q on some Star Trek show, and we think it's Picard.
And so he said it after he was on Lower Decks.
So it kind of all adds up to Jonathan Frakes. He had no text. He just put up this photo. And I think because he just loves telling people things. Let's not forget, Jonathan Frakes told a whole audience early in season 1 of Discovery at a convention. He's like, oh yeah, we're going to the Mirror Universe. And like, no one knew that at the time. So, and that's not the, he does this kind of thing. So he likes dropping spoilers, and they've trained him to stop. And you can't post pictures from the set. Like, he loves to show post pictures from the set. Can't do that either. So this may be the best he could do. It's like, you can't stop me from posting a 4-year-old picture, right?
And not saying anything. I mean, and the reason he wants to do it is because he's excited, which I love. And he knows that fans will be excited.
So here's the clincher is Terry Metalis, who's the showrunner for Picard, retweeted the photo.
Yeah.
Now, it is a cool photo, but it's not like he retweets everything that Jonathan does. So I think this is as close as we're going to get to Q's coming back and Geordi's coming back in season two or of Picard. They've never been on Picard before, but they are returning to their roles.
Right. Well, the funny thing was that you posted the story and I was looking at the comments and the first batch of comments were all skeptical. I think you're stretching. You don't know, blah, blah, blah. And then when it was retweeted by the showrunner, the tone of the comments started to change.
Right. I was like, oh, maybe there's something here.
Yeah, so, maybe you got something there, Smarty Pants.
Yeah. I mean, when we did the article, we weren't saying, you know, confirmed. We're just saying this is something. This is a thing. This could be a thing.
Yeah.
It's at least worth considering. I mean, LeVar said, I expect all of us to show up on the show. So he's kind of confirmed. I'll show up sometime.
Yeah. Michael Dorn's the only one who's like, I don't know anything. Nobody's calling.
Right. But what has me thinking is it's all of them together, right? So perhaps Geordi and Q are in the same episode. And I think if Q's in an episode, Whoopi's got to be in an episode. I don't know. It just seems weird to have Guinan, who is confirmed to be coming back, and Delancey Q there and not have them together because they have such great chemistry. So.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity.
But then how does Geordi fit into that? Because it gets like almost too much, right? So, you know, we'll see how that. Another thing that happened in the last week is our old friend Robbie McNeil.
Yay.
Who, as we've talked about on this pod before, he's talked to us about it. Did he talk to us about it?
He did talk to us. He talked to me about it. I don't know if he talked to you about it. Yeah, no, he did talk to us about it when I interviewed him and Garrett when their podcast was just launching.
Right. This idea of bringing back Captain Proton from Voyager, the black and white kind of Buck Rogers type serials as some kind of short Trek thing. You know, we haven't heard anything about it except that he's mentioned it. I talked to David Goodman about it, who Robbie said he'd like to write it. Goodman said he's all, you know, he hasn't written anything up, but he's all for the idea. You talked to Kate Mulgrew. She's all for the idea. Everyone's excited about this idea who worked on Voyager.
Well, she said it was the most fun she'd ever had on the whole show, which is funny.
Right. Her playing Queen Arachnia.
Yeah.
So Robbie, somehow, Kate Mulgrew posted a picture of her as Arachnia for reasons, nothing to do with this. Then people started talking about Proton. Then Robbie jumped on and said, yeah, he created this hashtag, Captain Proton series. He got other people doing it. He started tagging Alex Kurtzman, which I thought was funny, and Paramount Plus. So he's now moved his campaign to Twitter to make this happen. And
look, he's a producer, he's a director, he knows the industry. So it's not like just some random actor, you know, just saying, I want to do this thing with me in it. Like, this is someone who knows how to make TV and understands how the industry works.
Yeah, he's working now for Disney on their new Turner and Hooch.
And Resident Alien.
Right.
He's got a lot of stuff going on, always.
Yeah, yeah. He's not looking for work. He wants to play Star Trek again with his friends, and he wants Paramount to pay for it. But
okay, we all want that.
Yeah, but it's not like, okay, you know, it's a little different than Garrett.
Yeah,
trying to get this going, you know.
Yeah, that's the point I was sort of trying to make, because he's very much in the industry and he's on the production side.
Yeah, it sounds like he hasn't had a meeting with Alex Kurtzman, because you wouldn't be tagging someone if you were in talks and discussions.
No,
so he's trying to play the game of fan interest, and let's not forget that the Section 31 show that's been in development forever was announced like over 2 years ago, and the Strange New World show was announced last year and is now in production, and that show hadn't even been mentioned when the Section 31 show was announced. And the whole reason the Strange New World show really happened was because fans, I think, really reacted well to you know, to Anson Mount and Ethan Peck and Rebecca and the Enterprise. And, it, you know, there was a petition and Kurtzman said, we were listening to the fans. So I think that's what Robbie's trying to do. He's trying to get fans to spark Kurtzman to say, oh, the fans. Like, now, I'm not sure that there's certainly not the same level as we want Pike. I mean, this is a lot more neat. But then again, he's not asking for a 10 episode ongoing series, which would cost tens of millions of dollars. He's asking for a handful of short treks.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, we'll see. I'd say this has a 4.7% chance of ever happening.
Yeah. I was going to say, and also the thing is, like, I know the actors love doing it because it was campy and fun and it was totally different from everything else that they had to do. But it, as a viewer and a big Voyager fan, it was not my favorite.
You know, if you're going to do some Voyager related content for Short Treks, I'd rather see a Jerry Ryan Short Trek set after the, between Picard and the end of Voyager, you know.
No, and honestly, any of them. Like, I would watch, I'm interested in all the characters and what happened to all of them. So I
right,
would...
at least she, at least that would be tied into one of their current shows. Like, that's, that I think could happen, but I actually think they're going to do that on Picard itself. I don't think they're going to do any more Short Treks, but we've talked about that before. Like,
I want them to.
Yeah, they could. Maybe not. In other Voyager news, the Voyager documentary made by the same team that made What We Left Behind, the DS9 doc, finally launched their crowdfunding this week. Which is essentially a chance for you to pre-order either a digital or a Blu-ray DVD copy of the documentary. And that went up on Monday. Their initial goal was $150,000, which I think was low. And that was kind of for basic funding. They blew through that in hours.
Yeah, I think by the time I did it, they'd maybe already blown past it.
We're recording this on Thursday. They've already passed 500. I think they're heading close to six, might be by six by Friday, for all we know. So they've been adding all these stretch goals. So now it's going to be longer, 90 minutes. They're going to get an original soundtrack. They're going to do some filming in London at the next time the cast is all together, which is at Destination London, which I think is set for October 2021, which should probably happen
It seems realistic at this point. By the way, they're at 570,971.
There we go. And they're going to do some more interviews, and what they haven't detailed yet is whether they're committed to doing HD, even though when the shuttle pod crew interviewed them, they definitely said that that's part of the goal. I think they're going to come out with that as another stretch goal in the future, but they haven't officially said that yet. I have a little bit of a concern. So
let's hear it.
I'm glad that their people are putting money in, that they are stretching this thing, but I'm a little worried about scope creep on this, in that when you look back at the DS9 doc, and a lot of people really love that documentary, I still think that that was a good documentary series, and it should have been released as four episodes, because it just didn't have a focus. There was four stories it was telling, I feel like. There was the story of the underdog Star Trek show. There was the story of the cultural impact, especially with the way it dealt with sexuality and with race issues. Then there's kind of a behind the scenes story of the kind of how hard it was to make the show and the artistry that went into the show. Then there was the whole thing about
season eight
and the writer's room. Imagine that as like a, you know, multi-episode documentary series. I think that would have worked, but then they crammed it all into one doc and it just felt like a dog's breakfast. is that a term people use?
I have never heard that expression before, but I love it instantly.
It's something I picked it up somewhere, but it's just
it sounds, you know, British.
It might have been from my years in England. Anyway, so I like the doc, but it didn't have a story. It didn't tell a compelling story. A good documentary should tell a compelling story and should be appealing to people who aren't interested. Like, think of, I really like the documentary series on FX from the New York Times, right? So I recently watched the one about Britney Spears. I have no interest in Britney Spears, right? But it's a well-told story.
Yeah, I watched that too, actually.
You know, and so I found it interesting, the whole thing, you know, the rise to fame story and all the stuff about conservatorships and all that. And the one before that was really interesting to me about the Twitter hack from last year. That was great. The teenagers. So they don't. The DS9 doc was, I mean, the argument would be it was by fans for fans. Sure. But I think a great doc, I think the Spock documentary, I think some of the Captain's documentaries, I think Chaos on the Bridge, TNG documentary, all of were compelling to non-fans. And that's some of the same people who made these documentaries. And I just hope they've, one of the things that we haven't heard yet from the Voyager documentary crew is who's the creative vision behind this thing. And who's going to kind of put this together? Because they have a producer, and they have an editor, and they have a lot of, but I don't think they have a creative vision yet. And I hope they bring someone in. I hope it's a woman, and I hope she puts together a compelling story about Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I enjoyed the Deep Space Nine when I saw it in a movie theater with a whole bunch of Star Trek fans, but I agree that it was basically it felt like, oh, they looked at all the stuff they had and put in everything they thought was really fun and interesting. But yeah, it didn't have a thread going through it.
I think they shot too much because they constantly talk about how much they left on the cutting room floor. And I'm like, it was already too long. It was just, which is why they should have made it into a series, or they should have just stopped shooting at some point. They were creating too much raw material and they didn't know what to do with it. Because they just had so much.
And of course, if you start with an idea of the story you want to tell, but you're flexible as you go, I think you get a more sort of cohesive final product.
Right. So, you know, I'm glad it's going to be 90 minutes. I'm glad they're getting more funding. They set up a goal for the fall of 2022 to release. Now, of course, these kind of, you know, dates change a lot, but I think they should do what they can, COVID allowed, to focus, find a compelling story, stick to that date, and don't let feature creep, you know, turn this into a 3-hour documentary that gets delivered in 5 years.
Right. But so. I was happy to contribute. I'm excited about it. Some of the perks, if you contribute a lot of money, are crazy tours of locations with Star Trek stars, all kinds of crazy fun stuff. I'm not at that level, but I'm looking forward.
You could become an associate producer if you like.
Well, you'd get the title. I wouldn't call that becoming an associate producer.
Speaking of things on Blu-ray, this week it was announced the season one of Lower Decks is coming to Blu-ray and DVD on May 18th. It has 2 hours of special features. One I'm particularly looking for is one analyzing all the Easter eggs, because we did that every week when that show came out. We did an Easter egg analysis, and I'm looking forward to seeing if we missed anything.
We must have. I mean, we got a lot, but I'm sure there's more stuff that we didn't see.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the people who work on the show, not just Mike McMahon, are all Star Trek fans, and they're making Star Trek references whenever they can. So there's something called the Lower Dictionary where every episode kind of has a special feature. And so it looks like a pretty good release. They're also doing a steelbook if you're into that kind of thing. Check out the article on the site and click the links, which of course helps us a little bit because they're Amazon affiliate links. So whenever you see those, do what you can to support TrekMovie.com. All right. So it's time for us to pivot to our main topic this week, which is talking about the current and potentially future state of the Star Trek film franchise.
Yeah. And before we sort of talk about what's been on the table lately and where they might go, can you give some background on sort of the state of things at Paramount?
Everyone remembers, you know, so J.J. Abrams came in, rebooted the franchise 2009, then another movie came out 2013, Into Darkness. That movie made close to $500 million. It's not everyone's favorite, but Paramount was happy with the amount of money it made. And then they were moving forward on a third film, targeting 2016. They were going to make a movie with Bob Orsi. That movie was written. They decided it wasn't right. They didn't like it. It was a little too inside Star Trek.
A Star Trek movie that's too Star Trek.
Well, they were worried it didn't have enough mass appeal. They didn't have full confidence that Bob Orsi could direct a movie. He'd never directed a big movie before. And so that project was scrapped. And that they had to, but they wanted to keep with the 50th anniversary of 2016. So they sort of rushed a script out, and a new kind of a whole new idea. It was co-written by Simon Pegg and Doug Young, who were writing the thing, you know, even while they were shooting. Justin Lin directed, and that was Star Trek Beyond. And a lot of fans really liked the movie, but
yeah, it was my favorite of the three.
Yeah, because it too was very Star Trek-y. You know, it tied into Enterprise, and it was very fan-friendly, but it didn't do as well as Paramount was hoping. They were hoping each movie would be making more money, and it actually made about 25% less than the previous movie. That kind of sort of, you know, put a big damper in things at Paramount. Actually, though, it was one of the bright spots, even though it was disappointing. 2016 was a disaster for Paramount. They lost a ton of money. And the head of the studio had to go away, and it took them a few years to get things going again. And not really until 2019 were they really back in shape. But during that period, they had three different Star Treks in development, but none of them could really get past that. And then in 2020, they brought in a new head of feature films. So not a head of the studio, but just someone who's in charge of just the movies, and named Emma Watts from Fox, who'd done a lot of big movies at Fox. And she decided to put every Star Trek project on hold and is kind of reassessing what they do next with Star Trek, which I think is a good idea. I think, you know, it's said that she's looking at Star Trek as a priority and wants to make sure that they get it right. Because this has been a struggle for the studio for forever, really.
It
goes back to the 70s. Mm-hmm. How do you make Star Trek work as a feature film? And, you know, once they saw Star Wars in the 1970s, they're like,
77.
Yeah. We want some of that. And they've never got it, to be perfectly honest. I mean, from a studio point of view, they've never broken into that club with Star Trek. They've had a lot of success. They've made 13 movies. So they like making Star Trek movies, but they always struggle with how big of a budget to give these movies, how much appeal should they be going after? Should they be going after every quadrant, if you know the industry jargon? They deal a lot with issues related to geography. This has been one of the biggest problems of Star Trek, because really, they only worked domestically in English-speaking countries, but they did very poorly in Europe, everywhere besides Germany and the UK, and very poorly in Asia, and even in Latin America. And of course, Asia is now so important.
It's a huge market.
Yeah, there was a time in the 70s and 80s, you could get away with doing movies that were, you just kind of focused on the domestic side. But those days are pretty much over if you want to be in the, quote, tentpole game. You just cannot ignore the global market. And a lot of these movies make the majority of their money overseas. You'd be surprised at movies that get greenlit because you think they didn't do well here, and it's because they did so well everywhere else.
Also why action movies are very popular, you know, everywhere, because the language, obviously, yes, they dub and they subtitle, but action is like the universal language when it comes to movies.
Right. And the Abrams movies brought them about to parity, where they were making about 50-50, 50 overseas, 50% domestic. But I don't even think that's good enough anymore. I think now you need to do more than 50 overseas. So that's one of the big kind of things that they have to deal with, is how big of a movie to make, how big of a budget to make. Because I think Paramount could churn out a Star Trek movie that makes $300 million easily. But can they make a movie that makes $700 million? Or should they even try? That's kind of the big question mark. But I think that it feels like Emma Watts wants to try, or maybe come close to try. I don't think they're going to ever try to get to a billion, but I think they want to get over 500, which means they want to do something. They want to still play on the big tentpole playing field,
right,
with this franchise, which has been, you look at Paramount, they have Mission Impossible, they have Transformers and the other Hasbro titles, and they continue to move forward on those. They're literally making two missions at a time. They're making multiple Transformers movies, but this one, because a decade ago they were kind of rotating those three franchises, where like they were doing every summer they would do one of each, right? There would be a mission movie, next year there'd be a Transformers, and the next movie there'd be a Star Trek movie. And the Transformers and mission movies, although not at that same pace, but they've continued, but the Star Treks haven't, and because they haven't been able to bring in as much as they wanted to. So Emma Watts has three scripts. So let's talk about the three things on her desk and whether she should go forward with each one of them or maybe try something else. Right. So let's go through them one at a time.
We should start with I guess it's just called Star Trek IV, but it was meant to be a sequel to Beyond.
I mean, this was announced before Star Trek Beyond went out. Right. So when.
Yeah.
So they were assuming that, they're back in the Star Trek business. They were going to put out Star Trek Beyond, and then 2 or 3 years later they'd put out another movie with the same cast, but they were also going to bring back Chris Hemsworth, so they obviously had cut a deal with him, because you can't say his name unless you had some kind of deal with him, and they had a deal with all the actors. It was written by J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, a couple screenwriters who gone on to other things. Right now they're working on the most expensive television project of all time.
Yes, they are.
Lord of the Rings on Amazon, so they're a little busy. So that script was written in like 2018-ish. 17.
Right, and they brought in a director. It was going to be the first woman to direct a Star Trek movie.
Right, so again, they were just moving forward. This whole thing was like, it was all the normal things. Script was written, director was hired, S.J. Clarkson, which, was very cool, first woman director. But then, murmurs started coming out of Hollywood that, this thing's slowing down because of money. And that, because even though Paramount had kind of set this whole thing in motion, it appeared they didn't. Because remember, this is back when, after they had all their money problem, they couldn't afford to make this movie. And they were also kind of getting a bit more realistic, I think, if they were assuming that Beyond was going to make more than Into Darkness, and then the fourth movie was going to make even more than that, you could pay, you know, Hemsworth X and Chris Pine Y, right? But now they're thinking, well, maybe we're not going to make that much, so let's try to pay Pine and Hemsworth less money.
And they're both like, why should we do that?
Right.
Which I'm makes sense. Why should they do that? And I mean, honestly, the other big piece for me is I remember when they announced it and it's like, oh, J.J. Abrams says it's going to be a time travel thing and Kirk and his dad. And I was like, I'm not interested in that. That's not a compelling story to me. I understand they want Hemsworth because he'd become such a huge star. And especially when they're talking those international, you know, you want international success. Sure, Chris Hemsworth is going to help with that. But the story is not interesting to me. And I think a lot of fans were like, I don't care about that so much.
Well, that's not, I mean, time travel is an element, you know, I mean,
Kirk and his dad. Kirk and his dad is not a story that I've been dying to know about.
I was open-minded to that. And certainly I was happy to see Chris Hemsworth back because I think he's great. And I thought he'd be great to bring in new fans, which I think is important. And so I was certainly open-minded to this because I wanted to see the Kelvin crew back for a fourth movie. They all always talk about, we want to come back. Chris Pine says, I want to come back.
Yeah. No, and they were great. I mean, whatever. The movies are erratic, but the cast is fantastic.
So basically by the end of 2000, I mean, this movie was supposed to start shooting in January 2019.
Yeah.
So this is 2 years ago. They should have, you know, which means that the movie would have been in theaters. Well, it wouldn't have been because of COVID, but
right.
In, you know, if it ever happened, it would be like the Maverick movie, right? Where it was just a movie sitting on the Paramount shelf waiting for theaters to open again. But they would have it done. It would be in the can right now, ready to go. But it wasn't because...
Right. And it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's one project. Okay. So even while this project was cooking, another project in late 2017 came up, which basically at some point, Quentin Tarantino, which
I know, like, the whole story is so funny.
It's so weird to even be like, why are we talking about Quentin Tarantino? Like, if you haven't been on, you know, paying attention to Star Trek for the last couple of years, you're like, why are you talking about Quentin Tarantino? But this is absolute fact. He was, you know, I guess somewhere with J.J. Abrams, you know, probably some soiree, and he's like, you know, I got a Star Trek idea, and
J.J. Abrams is like, cool, let's do it.
Yeah. And because that's basically it, like, he has a pitch, he has an idea, and J.J.'s like, that's cool. Paramount's like, Quentin Tarantino, Star Trek, why not? And so that becomes a project. They bring in a writer, a very good writer. The guy who wrote The Revenant, he wrote The Midnight Sky, which is the Netflix movie with George Clooney. I thought that was a pretty good sci-fi movie. So
his name's Mark L. Smith.
Right. And Tarantino is a huge Shatner fan. He loves classic Star Trek. And so he wanted to do something different, an R-rated, edgy, you know, he said it was going to be kind of like Pulp Fiction in space.
Yep.
And we still don't know exactly the story of this thing. It's somehow related to the original series episode, A Piece of the Action.
Which is random.
It almost certainly includes a Kirk, which I think was confirmed by the writer. We don't know which Kirk. I think it could have been both of them, both Shatner and Pine.
I could see Quentin Tarantino wanting to do something with both. It makes total sense.
First of all, Quentin Tarantino doesn't understand the difference between the Kelvin timeline. And
right.
I think no matter what they did with this movie, it would not, quote, fit into anything. I think this movie was going to be some kind of weird Quentin Tarantino thing.
Yeah, well, because that's what Tarantino does, is weird Tarantino things. Yeah.
If this was the only thing happening, if this is the only projects Paramount had for Star Trek, I'd be like, no, don't do this. But if this was a project in a pantheon of projects, yeah, it sounds interesting. But things, again, started fizzling out, I think. You know, and there was like, there was a big, you know, convention of this big cinema convention, and the head of Paramount said, we've got two Star Trek movies in development, you know, which was the Star Trek IV we just talked about and this Tarantino thing. So they were going forward on this kind of multi Star Trek path a couple years ago, which is no different than the Star Wars people are doing at Disney and DC, and these, you know, other franchises are certainly, the MCU are taking this approach of, they kind of do big movies and maybe smaller size, different movies like the Joker for DC, but then they'll also do like a, you know, big Justice League movie. So that was the world of Star Trek, was very exciting a couple years ago for movies. This one sort of fizzled out, I think, because A, the Star Trek IV project was fizzling out, and you don't want to just do the Tarantino movie.
Right.
And I think the other side of this was, Tarantino himself was always iffy on how involved he would be, because if you want to promote this as a Tarantino movie, that one of the issues is this is based on an idea from Quentin Tarantino. So he would have a story by credit, but he wouldn't have a screenwriter credit. And he did, apparently, in the end, he decided he didn't want to direct it either, because I think he only is going to direct one more movie. And
that I think was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No, well, yeah, that was his second to last movie. Then he's going to do one more after that, which I don't think he's announced yet. Forgive me if I've got that wrong, but it's not going to be a Star Trek movie, right? And so Paramount definitely wants to make a Quentin Tarantino directed Star Trek movie.
When all the actors were going crazy, like they were
actors
all...
weren't even involved. Like, you know, Patrick Stewart said he wanted to be involved.
Yeah, George Takei wanted to be involved.
Yeah, it's Quentin Tarantino. Who wouldn't want, you know, Jonathan Frakes? Everyone's raising their hand saying, you know, put me in, coach. But if it's not a Quentin Tarantino directed movie, it's a story by, and they bring in another director. You know, it's one of those things of maybe they could have branded it enough. People think of the Nightmare on Elm, the Nightmare Before Christmas as a Tim Burton movie, right? But right. He neither wrote nor directed that movie. It was just his idea. And
right.
He was kind of oversaw the project, but he went off to make a Batman movie while other people actually made that movie, even though it was branded, when you look at the posters, as his name's up on top.
Yeah, it's Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Because it was kind of his idea. It was certainly his vision. But so there may be a way they could kind of squeeze this in to be a Tarantino movie, even if he's not actually, you know. But if I were the director, I'd be a little bummed if like everyone's talking about this guy who actually didn't work on the movie.
Right.
So they'd have to get him involved, like as a producer or something, to give it that, you know, patina of Tarantino.
Right. And to me, because I agree with you that I wouldn't want that to be the only next Star Trek movie. I mean, my personal take on Tarantino is I think he's brilliant, but we don't have the same taste, he and I.
Right.
So I think he's a great filmmaker and I think he's incredibly creative, but I don't see most of his movies because they're too much for me and I don't want to see those things. But if he's going to do a Star Trek, then it really needs to be fully his take on it in more than just a story way.
So as these projects were fizzling, Paramount in 2019 said, okay, well, let's bring in someone new and do something new. And maybe we don't shoot for the big stuff, right? So they brought in Noah Hawley, who is the showrunner and the visionary behind Legion and Fargo. You know, he's kind of an auteur. He's very smart.
Big Star Trek fan, longtime Star Trek fan.
Yeah, and a Star Trek fan. And they brought him to do his own take. He would write and direct. And so he started doing that. He started working on it in, I think, late 2019. And by 2020, he had written a script, handed it in. He'd started some pre-production, apparently, getting some design work done. So he was sort of gearing up. His idea was, we don't know much, except that it somehow was, there was a pandemic storyline related to it. We do, which was just bad timing, right. I think.
Oh, dude. Oh, yeah, no. He didn't know. Nobody knew.
Right, because he started before COVID.
Yes.
But definitely, his take was definitely something entirely new.
Yeah, new cast.
New everything.
Yeah.
Right? So it wasn't a reboot. It was just something new. New cast, new crew, not action-oriented. He's kind of talked about how he doesn't like that. So,
yeah, I like that in a lot of the interviews, he talked about how his favorite scene in a Star Trek movie is in Star Trek II when Kirk puts on his reading glasses and gets Khan's shields lowered. And he just loved that moment. It's a great moment.
Right. So I'm thinking a more cerebral, smaller sci-fi movie. There is a world for that, obviously. There's lots of great, smaller, more cerebral, less action-oriented sci-fi movies. And some people would argue that Star Trek is at its best, you know, in those kind of character stories. And Star Trek the Motion Picture itself, I think, fits into this mold, even though it had one of the biggest budgets, certainly bigger than all the other 80s yeah. Star Trek movies. So Emma Watts came in. She's now, you know, in mid-2020, and the Hawley project was the one that kind of had the most momentum at this point. It was kind of moving along, and she put it on pause, and she said, let me rethink this whole thing. And those were her three choices. And you know, the last we heard, which has been a few months, was that she's looking back to saying, what was so bad about this Chris Hemsworth thing?
Yeah.
So and maybe in 2020 she's got more money than they did when they were saying no to Chris Pine, when they were having all their money trouble. Because strangely enough, in the world of COVID and there's no actual movies, Viacom CBS is not short on cash. And they're also very good at bringing in strategic partners. If you look at the, you know, the beginning of these movies and there's all those logos, most of those logos are basically people putting in money that aren't right. actually doing anything. Usually some Chinese company and just some, you know, random people who give you $30 million, $50 million. And we've seen this with the other Star Trek movies, and you kind of need them to really make a big movie these days. Certainly Paramount does, Disney doesn't. And they could put a package together probably with a Chris Hemsworth. At least they're considering it again. And so, and Hawley, I think, had some, you know, after this kind of fell apart, he started, you know, while he was promoting Fargo, he started waxing philosophical about not just Star Trek, but in general, that you just can't make a small, you know, medium-sized movie, which is something that Ron Moore said to us a few yeah. weeks ago, right? You kind of got to go big or small, and by small, really small. There's no more medium movies. I'm not sure that's entirely true. There are, you know, movies between 100 and 200 made, you know, because the issue is once you get over 200 million for a budget, you've now moved into where you need to make Marvel movie money.
Right.
And I think for the amount of money that they're supposed to pay Hemsworth and Pine and the rest of the cast, because they all ratcheted up, it may not be possible to make a Kelvin movie with all of them and Hemsworth for $125 million. I think that's just like literally impossible unless they're all just sitting around a room talking to each other.
Right.
You know, and there's no explosions and there's, you know, no ship.
Right.
Then you end up with the, you know, if you make a movie for that, can you make over $500 million? Is it possible? And obviously, you know, Emma Watts is greenlighting movies all the time, believe it or not, even though we're still in the world of COVID. The studios are all banking that 2022, 2023, everything's going to be fine again.
Right. I mean, this is a tough one because you want to use Star Trek because it's a familiar franchise and there are people who know it and love it, but they need to go so far beyond that group of people that it's very hard to please both groups of people.
It is. But I hear a lot of people who got into Star Trek because of the J.J. Abrams movies.
Yeah.
And for us, you know, for us fans who were into it before then, it's hard to believe that, but those really brought in a lot of people. You would not, Star Trek Discovery would never have happened if it weren't for the Kelvin movies.
I was going to say, we wouldn't have this exciting TV universe if those movies hadn't happened.
Yeah, or they would have done something smaller, different, that, you know, we wouldn't have five shows.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, they jumped in assuming a fan base of both old fans and people who became fans in the last decade. And so, you know, it's a difficult position for Paramount to be in right now of, you know, do you kind of try to keep that going? Because whenever you start over on something, there's a whole other set of costs associated with reintroducing it. Starting over is risky, you know, because you got to do that all over again, but it saves you a ton of money.
It does, but then you're juggling the whole, what's the point of this franchise if it's all new, and is the name enough to take you to get that audience that you need? I mean, it's a tough question. Like the way JJ did it with the Star Trek was, yeah, it was an all new cast, but they were playing characters we already knew. And they were certainly, some of them, emulating the performances of the actors who'd come before them. Not all of them, but like there's, you know, Carl Urban was channeling DeForest Kelly in so many beautiful ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Each of them had
Simon
their Pegg
own. For sure, too, with Scotty.
I would like to see them give that one a shot, but there is only so far they could go down the Kelvin timeline. I think if they do a fourth movie, it would probably be the last one anyway. So they need to start thinking more long term about that. But once they kind of reestablish, but that's the thing. If they reestablish the brand, is that a better time to then bring in something new? Or should they say, you know what, let's rip the Band-Aid off and start something new now? Something entirely new. Because they... We've talked about this three project ideas, but there's no reason why. Well, one thing they could do. So let's say Hemsworth is just out. He doesn't want to do it. He wants too much money. He doesn't like the script because he's kind of implied he wasn't a huge fan of the script to begin with. So they could commission a new script. They'd have to bring in new writers. And they could create another Star Trek IV movie around a whole new idea, a whole new script, and just have the same Kelvin cast and try to find someone who's maybe not Chris Hemsworth, but someone who's recognizable worldwide. Don't put him under a ton of makeup have him be a big part of the movie. I don't know who, but, you know, name a big star, probably someone from the MCU, and bring him in. And
Scarlett Johansson, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there are options there. So Chris Hemsworth isn't deciding whether the world moves forward. And I think Chris Pine is definitely more amenable. He said some very positive things in the last year. And he's working with Paramount. He's making two different movies with Paramount. So they are all getting along. His agent and Paramount are able to cut deals. So this should be able to happen if they could get that house of cards together. But I still think that there's a limit to how many full cast Kelvin movies they could do. Maybe one more. I mean, two. But, you know,
if they did them quickly, they'd have to do them
quickly. And they would have to. And that one would just have to be really good and make a ton of money. Because the amount of money that I'm going to have to pay these guys to do a fifth one would be insane, right? So that's probably it. They really need to start thinking about what else to do. Now, this is where something like the Tarantino project is fine, because you just do a kind of goofy one-off like the Joker, and it could make a ton of money. The Joker made a ton of money, even though it was R-rated. It didn't fit into... You can't say... People are trying to make it fit, you know, but it doesn't. It's not supposed to. That's fine. It doesn't fit with the Shazam movie. They're both great movies, I think. I love the Shazam movie. I love the Joker movie. They're both part of DC. And DC's definitely... I mean, they're doing a lot of these standalone movies. And that's another option they could do, is they could take someone from the Kelvin movies.
Right.
Zoe, just pick one of them and do a movie with just them. Right. And they go off on an adventure. I mean, you know, you're probably limited. It probably can only be Chris Pine and Zoe Saldana, I think, are the only two that could really pull it off.
Oh, in terms of starring and yeah.
I mean, you know, the Great Adventures of Sulu, you know, love John Cho, but is Paramount going to spend, you know, $200 million on a John Cho movie? You know.
No, and it also depends as these actors, you know, they're all doing different projects, and so then they get more famous and their level of fame changes. So that could also change. That suddenly John Cho will do some movie and everybody's talking about him.
If you think about the Star Trek movies, they're kind of all like the Avengers movies, right? Where they're all together. But you don't need to assemble them all together in one movie. Maybe you could do a John Cho movie, a Sulu movie, but it's smaller. You know,
take two of them and that might help, you know?
Yeah, sure. You know, you do one with Zoe and Zachary, right? And it's a action romance comedy. Who knows?
Oh, boy. Please don't. I'm just going to say right now, please don't do that one.
Right. But I would say that's definitely something that should be on the table, is spinning off the universe they've created. That's the thing. We've invested a ton of money. We've built up a lot of goodwill. Fans like these people. I mean, I know there's a lot of fans. I don't like JJ movies, but a lot of fans really like it. It has a lot of mass market appeal.
Yeah.
You don't have to throw it away yet. But maybe that doesn't work. So maybe they can't do a big Kelvin movie. Maybe they can't do a spinoff. Now things are starting to get, okay, well, now we're back into start over territory, right? So let's say for whatever reason, you're Emma Watts, and you're being told no one wants to do the movie. No, everyone's too busy for 20 years. If you're doing another Star Trek movie, you have to start from scratch, zero. We can't use anyone. What do you see as some of the ideas? And maybe, you know, is there one that jumps out at you and says, this is what I would do? What about Brent Spiner's idea?
Oh, a rebooted Next Generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I wouldn't. That wouldn't be my choice. I think that it feels too soon, even though it wasn't that soon, but maybe that's just because I'm always still watching it. I don't know. Well, because Picard is still viable, you know, because they're all still in Picard, right? So we have Riker, Troy, Picard. We know we're getting Guinan. We're probably getting Geordi, Q, whoever. So I would say don't do that.
Yeah, I'd say hold on to that for
10 years.
Seven to 10 years, okay, after Picard's over. But bear in mind, the final season of Picard is probably, because season two Picard's going to drop in 2022. Season three is 2023-2024. So we're not that far away from all of that being over, right?
Right. And but then you need some time after that.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying you do it right away. Like, you know, you liked him in season three. Say hello to the new Picard in 2025.
Right.
But maybe 2030. Okay, so let's put new TNG as a possible good idea. And then later, the question later, and if the Kelvinverse is still a thing, then they could do it in the Kelvinverse. Because the other way to do TNG, because you have two choices with the reboot of TNG. You reboot TNG inside of the Kelvinverse, which has freedom but limitations. Right.
Right.
So because Picard is Picard, right? He's white, male, English, French name, lives in France.
Right. Supposed but still to be kind French, of English. Actually English. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but that, you know, if you were Ron Moore, you're like, you know, I may do Picard, but he's going to be, you know, he's going to be black actor, and I'm going to change the gender of Geordi, and that'd be fine. You know, because you are rebooting, you know, entirely. I mean, the thing that Orsi and Kurtzman did, which was clever, was they, quote, rebooted Star Trek, but not really rebooted it. Because, you know, a full reboot, a Battlestar Galactica style reboot, or really, you know, a lot of the stuff that happens in the DC and MCU, you know, are much more, you know, crazy, although those are kind of multiverse as well. So that'll be a big question for the TNG reboot. But that comes up with the idea of the... So if you are talking about clean sheet of paper, we don't know what Holly had in mind, because you could just do a movie with a new crew set in the original series timeline, kind of the way Kurtzman's doing it, to say, well, yeah, everything looks fancy and it looks, you know, the ship doesn't exactly match other ships, but we're still saying it's part of the Prime universe. And this is a new captain, a new crew, and, you know, but it's still all part of the same universe. You could do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you do it in the Kelvin universe. Or you do it and say, this doesn't fit anything. Those are kind of their three options. So if you were doing clean sheet, which of those three would you go for?
I mean, such a tough call. I tend to think I would stick with the Kelvin universe and keep that as a movie thing. I think it helps separate what's going on TV from what's going on in the movies. And I would probably start, as much as I love that JJ cast, I would start with a new cast and try to tell a different story and try not to get stuck with people's ideas of who these characters are. So I would have new characters and I would have it take place probably, it's hard to decide what era is the most interesting, but I might want to pick one that hasn't been played in yet.
Well, this comes, I mean, this is something that the Star Wars franchise is now dealing with, which is the universe itself compelling enough that we could do a new movie set in a new era with an entirely new set of characters and no connections.
Right. And is it, and what makes it still Star Trek besides, oh, they've got phasers. So that's a challenge. I mean, the other thing, which we talked about when we were talking about all the options for Paramount Plus 2 and TV shows, is that you can always, there's such a rich history that you can pull an incident that was talked about and actually play it out.
Right.
From somewhere across the entire franchise. You could pick anything that kind of popped to you. I mean, even when we were talking about what different series could be, like, again, you could do something that's very focused on Romulans or something else.
Right. For example, going back into history, after Star Trek Nemesis was another period where Paramount's like, what do we do next? And one of the things that was considered at the time was a Romulan war movie, new cast, new crew. So this is after Enterprise, but it wasn't related to Enterprise, actually. So it wasn't like Archer in the Romulan War. It was a whole different thing.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't be remotely interested in a war-based
story. That's the same, but that's your idea of pick something we know about, quote, the Romulan War, and, you know, but there's other things you could do. But that's a piece of Star Trek history that happened, and they could do a movie about it with new characters, but it's kind of part of Star Trek history.
Right. And there are many, many choices for those kinds of things.
Yes. I want the negotiation with the Shellyak, a whole movie about
that. I was
that.
Just thinking about the Shellyak.
Just hours and hours of guys in rooms, line by line. You know, but you still have Chris Pine or some, you know, high-powered stars going over these contracts, you know. Okay, that's not a real idea, but, you know.
But there are all kinds of historical events that they talked about that would work, I think. There are so many different creative options, but I definitely tend to think my taste runs more to the kind of Noah Hawley kind of thinking than the big blockbuster action movie kind of thinking. And that probably doesn't serve their business needs.
But you're also thinking Kelvin-y, because I think Alex Kurtzman would like to see them bring the movies in line with the Star Trek universe shows he's building out, right? So by 2024, he'll probably have launched. So we're talking about, everything we're talking about here is a movie coming out in 2023 at the earliest, but most likely 2024. And by that time, he's probably launching yet another Star Trek show on Paramount Plus, because Picard's wrapping up, or at least he's preparing to do that. So as he's about to launch yet another Star Trek show, and he's talked about doing something, quote, different, maybe different galaxy, different era, you know, what if there was some link to this, to the movies?
I wouldn't do that. I really wouldn't. I think it is more useful to keep them separate. And I think you give yourself more freedom creatively if you keep them separate. The more they try and tie these things together, that they it gets very tangled.
Well, it's working for the MCU. It's DC, you're doing it a different way. The whole Arrowverse is not really tied in, although, you know, there's some kind of weird multiverse stuff where it is tied in.
They get tied in. They do.
But it's not, you know, it's not like the MCU. And the Star Wars, they're really trying to have it all fit together into one coherent universe, both television, animated television, and feature films. One thing I really like this idea, and apparently Emma Watts likes this as well, of doing multiple Star Trek movies. And, you know, the Jim Giannopoulos, who's still the head of Paramount, you know, who said, we're doing two Star Trek movies a couple years ago. I think he likes that idea, too, of getting into the ballgame of what they are doing with the MCU and others, of different scale, different movies, maybe targeting different audiences. That's certainly what they're doing on the television side. So, because that's one of the problems of trying to make one movie to try to solve every problem, to try to be everything. And I think maybe shooting for some variety may help. And so maybe you do two medium movies instead of one giant movie. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I agree. And that's the appeal of the Tarantino thing, was that it's just some weird, quirky, extra thing going in there.
which means, as you say, extra. It shouldn't be the Star Trek thing, but it can be a Star Trek thing. I mean, I'm just dying to read the script. Someday I'll get
too.
My hands on it.
Yeah.
I hope. But, you know, it's just, you know, for the weirdness of it all.
Yeah, Carl Urban said it was bananas.
I'm sure it makes no sense and doesn't fit and is very strange. And
no, and I keep thinking, if it's a piece of the action, I don't think it's the, I think it might be the repercussions of McCoy's communicator, but who knows?
Right. It doesn't, I'm not sure it's more gangsters, because what's interesting about the planet isn't that they were gangsters. It was that they were mimics.
Yeah.
But there've been multiple like comic books and
there
was, of course, as you know, this is getting off topic, but the Trials and Tribulations episode of DS9 was going to be at one point returning to that planet, but they all became Star Trek fans essentially. And it was a little too meta, because they were going to show up and it would be like a Star Trek convention. Everyone's wearing the uniforms and stuff. And, you know, I think that would have been amusing, but I get why they didn't do that.
They made the right choice in the end.
Yeah. Anyway, but that's so, but it doesn't sound like you and I are ready to tell Emma what to do, I guess. And shouldn't we, because I know she's listening, of course.
Of course she is. She's actually here at my house.
And something we haven't talked about is, you know, there could be a thought to make a Star Trek movie for Paramount Plus, a lower budget.
Right. That's something Noah Hawley even talked about, I think, in some of his interviews, when he was saying that his thinking wasn't tentpole thinking.
There's a SpongeBob movie that was originally going to be a theatrical release that is part of the Paramount Plus release. They've said they're going to do more of that, more where Paramount Pictures, not CBS Studios, which are separate, would make a movie and then it would show up just on Paramount Plus. I worry that if they did that, if that was the next Star Trek, quote, movie, that would almost relegate Star Trek to just being a streaming property, which, I don't know, maybe that's okay, but it would almost be kind of giving up on, because once you tell the marketplace, this is a new Star Trek movie and we're putting it on our streaming platform, they're almost saying you shouldn't be paying a ticket and going to the movies to see a Star Trek movie anymore.
Right.
Now, put it now that the Star Trek, and some people would argue, I sometimes think Star Trek works better on TV, So maybe they should just do that. But I don't want them to give up. And of course, it is TrekMovie.com. Even though we do all everything Star Trek, we started focusing on the JJ movies, and I just want to see them make one more of those. You know, just
don't give up yet. For me, it's a conflict, it's an internal conflict, because I do want there to be more movies. I want to go see it on the big screen. I want it to happen for the franchise and success and mass appeal and all of that. But my tastes run to Star Trek on the small screen and character stories instead of, you know, big, giant, crazy stories like they tried to do.
But, I mean, I'd be happy to take... You saw the 2009 Star Trek movie, you saw the scale and the quality, you know, it just blew my mind. I just couldn't believe I was seeing Star Trek at this level, because it had been so long. So, you know, if you think of the last time we were out there was Star Trek Nemesis, and the movies just kept shrinking and shrinking. And it was a thrill ride. And yes, it has flaws, for sure. But, you know, even beyond, you know, there is something to the movie theater experience, the thrill ride experience. And I think that Star Trek can have both of those. And maybe movie doesn't have to be everything. Maybe it's just okay to have a thrill ride, exciting movie that has some character moments and beats, but isn't trying to be sitting on the edge of forever with the kind of emotional impact that is, you know, that the. That's, you know, we've got TV shows for that, right?
That's how you get the mass appeal. And yeah, you won't get all the Star Trek fans, although most Star Trek fans will go and see it, even if they're not going to like it, because then they get to complain about it. But I mean, it's certainly not what I'm looking for in a Star Trek movie. And the disappointments that I had have been basically like, oh, hey, Kirk. I mean, I loved Star Trek Beyond, but I did not need him on a motorcycle. You know, like those kinds of things to me are just silly and I don't need them. Other people like it. So what do I know? My favorite thing about Beyond was the way that they split up the characters and had them in different groups trying to do things. And I thought that was great. So you're
trying. I'm not going to disagree with that. I did not like the motorcycle. Yeah, I'm not saying that every time they shoot for the set piece action thing, and Ron Moore talked about this, about you write a movie and then it needs to appeal to a bigger, so you just put in an action scene here. You know, I think he obviously he and Brandon dealt with that more when they wrote Mission Impossible, which I think both of them complained about was just a series of action sequences.
Yeah, I've never seen any of those movies because nothing about them interests me,
right?
But I also don't like Tom Cruise. There, I said it. But I have no interest in those movies because it's just, to me, it just looks like action, 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 action. And again, you can make it, you can change my mind. Like if you said to me, do you like car chases? I'd say no. And yet I could tell you some fantastic movie car chases that I would watch a million times. So it all depends on how it's done.
Okay. So we still don't have a recommendation on what to do next. Or at least you and I aren't agreeing on one. I'm saying do a big Kelvin movie, do a weird movie, whether it's Tarantino's or another, do a kind of smaller offshoot movie, pick one character and do something interesting with them.
Yeah, I like the third option. I like picking a character, and I think you could pick a character. You could pick a Kelvin character. I think if it would I don't know if this would work because the other shows, let's say the 90s shows, aren't mainstream popular beyond Next Generation, but maybe one of those characters could work. I don't know. Something to think
about. Yeah. Well, I think we've wrapped up Star Trek movies, have we?
We've wrapped up movies. If anyone's still here, we commend you.
So we like to do our Star Trek bits of the week. Usually it's something fun, but actually have something a little bit more serious. There was an article at StarTrek.com saying Star Trek stands with our AAPI community, and AAPI stands for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. And during the pandemic, there's kind of been this rash of attacks and racism towards Asian Americans, which has been pretty horrible. And this is a great article. They talked to a lot of the Asian actors who worked on Star Trek, and they're trying to bring more visibility to this problem.
It's a huge problem. I mean, it's friends of mine are going through hell because people are just picking on them. They've been, you know, there's violence. There's just, it's terrible. And people just throw out all these comments and it's been awful.
So they have, you know, George Takei and Daniel Day Kim and Rosalind Chow and other people. And Takei was on CNN over the weekend. So the Star Trek community is rallying together to shine a light on this and hopefully mitigate some of this, so that, because it's kind of been under the radar. When people talk about racism in America, they usually don't think about Asian Americans, but it's been a big problem in the last year, and hopefully it stops. So that is my kind of downer Trek bit of the week, but people should read this article at StarTrek.com, watch the Takei interview on CNN, and do what they can to help the Asian American community.
Yeah.
And awareness to this issue. So on that somber note, hopefully you have something more fun to share for your Trek bit of the week.
If you want non-somber, I've got non-somber for you. So in my journey across the web, I somehow stumbled across the audio on this video is terrible, but it's Jonathan Frakes in 1978 auditioning for the show Welcome Back, Kotter. Now, if you are over a certain age, you remember Welcome Back, Kotter was a huge sitcom, and it was the place where John Travolta got famous. It had all these catchphrases. Everybody watched it. It wasn't a great show, but everybody watched it. And if you're under a certain age, you've probably never heard of it and have no idea what I'm talking about. But there was a time where John Travolta was reducing his hours on it. They wanted to bring in a new character, a sexy guy from New Orleans who could be like a heartthrob. And so somehow someone found Jonathan Frakes' audition. He didn't get the role. It's so funny to see him playing this, you know, a sweat hog, like hearing that word for the first time and responding to it. That was the name of the, you know, the students on it were called the Sweat Hogs. And there's a great little bit at the end where they just start asking him about himself when he's done the audition. And of course, he's sitting on a desk with his feet on the chair, because we know he doesn't sit on chairs, even in 1978. And he actually makes everyone laugh, which doesn't surprise me. But then I went, so that audition alone is hilarious to watch.
And so then he's playing a teenager?
Yeah, so he's playing a new sweat hog who's like this, you know, cute guy from New Orleans who has all these bizarre expressions. Like the character was named Bo, and they did eventually hire someone not famous. The guy's name is Steve Shortridge. I looked it up, but I'm like, I'd stopped watching the show before that happened. Anyway.
Because Frakes was well into his 20s at that point, but I guess, you know, people didn't pay that much attention in those days.
Oh no, I mean, all those actors were like 30 who were playing high school. If you think about Welcome Back, Kotter, and you just go look at a picture of the cast and tell me if they look like high school students, like not even worse than Riverdale, where they were supposed to be in high school and they're all 25. Like they, you know, they were definitely too old to be doing that. But it was a huge, huge show. I could see why he auditioned. So then I start going down this rabbit hole of like, what else was he doing in 1978? So he was on Fantasy Island. He was on The White Shadow. He was on Eight Is Enough. And then I saw he was on Charlie's Angels. And I was like, okay, which episode? And then I look it up and it says the one. And as soon as I saw the episode description, believe it or not, I remembered exactly who he was, even though the last time I watched it was for sure around the time it was on, and I had not watched, there was no Next Generation. Like, it was Brad, the guy on the beach. And I'm like, I remember Brad, the guy on the beach. So I've watched it today.
We're going to have Jonathan Frakes on the show at some point, and we could spend a whole hour not talking about Star Trek with him, just
right.
About
no, change. I mean, I did it. I love Hill Street Blues, and I rewatched it in the last few years, and he's a Coke dealer on Hill Street Blues. But I just might need to go into his whole 70s, early 80s life and just find all those episodes, because I grew up in front of the TV. I watched all of those shows I just mentioned. I watched all of them.
Wow.
So I think it'll be really funny. Anyway, the one funny thing I'll say about the Charlie's Angels thing, which I should probably put up a link to also, is that he's wearing short shorts, like the shortest shorts I've ever seen in my life on
like
a man.
Dolphin shorts?
Like so insanely, these little, you know, he's on the beach playing volleyball and whatever, and he's got these tiny, teensy little shorts. And he also, he helps Cheryl Ladd's character, and he's very nice to her. So that's good. But and she's touching his face so softly. Anyway, but start with the audition. I'll put both of them up. But the audition is crazy to look at. He's doing this accent, and it's just, he's so young and sweet, and obviously like makes them all laugh because he is just lovable already then.
Wow. That was a deep dive into the past, but worth it.
Yes. Just for the short shorts, honestly.
So thank you for slogging through yet another episode of All Access Star Trek, our 31st. We'll be back next Friday, as we are every Friday, with the new episode of All Access Star Trek. So thanks for listening, and hear you next week.
Yeah, and please come to the site. We'd love suggestions for topics. We are looking for more while we wait for new episodes. So leave us comments, tell us what you think of this episode, give us suggestions for more, and if you really like us, please put a review on iTunes. And if you don't like us, don't. No, actually, you can. You should do whatever you want. But thanks.
Be honest.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.